Welcome to episode 68 of the Mommy Beta Podcast. We are four new mommies beta testing parenthood. And today we're going to talk about sharing breast milk, some daddy talk. We're going to talk more about the French. Hope you're not tired of that discussion. And we're going to talk about staying away from batteries, which is always a good rule in your life. We have two mommies on the line today. I'm Natalie Morris. We also have Alex Aronoff and the other Natalie and Jennifer are off this week. Hi, Alex. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. We're just talking about how I'm tired. I'm still nursing. Ava's going to be 4 months at the end of the week.
Oh my! It's going by so fast.
I know, she's growing really fast, and just I adore her. But so I'm still nursing. So she's still 110% made of me. She's never even had any formula or anything. It makes me tired a lot and hungry like a horse. But I'm doing well. But I wanted to talk about breastfeeding because this story came out this week. It was a USA Today post about how it's become quite common to share breast milk. People are using Facebook to share breast milk. There's websites where you can buy. And I knew about buying breast milk on the internet when I was pregnant the first time around. But I didn't really realize how social and interactive it had become. And it's really something that women are starting to adopt in mass quantities. What do you think of this?
I think, you know, I think it's great. When I first heard about it, when I first had Reese, I was breastfeeding and I was having some issues. I think at 4 months, my milk supply completely disappeared and I was really upset about it. And my mom said, well, why don't you just borrow some girlfriend's breast milk? And I thought it was the weirdest thing. And I said, I can't feed my baby, you know, somebody else's breast milk. She's like, why? And I don't think she said she did it, but she, you know, she's heard of it and it didn't, she, it was like no big deal to her. Luckily my breast milk came in. I didn't need to do that, but I did look at the options. And I remember looking on my mommy board here in San Francisco and people were on the board asking for milk to be donated because their babies needed milk. So, you know, I think it's a great idea. You know, I get kind of squirmish about that, but if I needed to do it and, I'd consider it.
You know, I think, your gut reaction is usually like, oh, that sounds weird. But We feed our children milk from cows. So why are humans any more gross than cows? It doesn't really make sense. We just have a weird cultural issue about it. And that's what the whole issue, there's a whole concept of wet nurse. That, you know, you used to, like, I guess it was rich women back in the Victorian era or whatever would just hand their babies off to be nursed by a servant or something, right? So it's not like it's a new idea. It's just that they couldn't find those servants through Facebook back then.
Yeah. And I think, didn't the author of this this article talk about how she was driving somewhere, her and a girlfriend, they both had infants and they were in a storm. And so they pulled over at a hotel and they had no supplies other than, you know, she was breastfeeding and her friend that she was with had stopped breastfeeding and had just enough formula. And they had discussed, well, if her friend had a formula, then the other mom who was breastfeeding would breastfeed her baby. Because you don't think twice. You just, you know, babies need food. And in that situation, there was no choice. You want to help another mother out.
Right. Yeah. And it talks about how the milk is screened for virus and bacteria and such. You can't, you know, drink a whole bottle of wine and then pump it out for someone else's kid. They're going to go through it and make sure that it's viable
Thank
milk.
Thank goodness.
Right. Yeah. Remember that story about a year ago where the woman did like meth or something and then breastfed her kid died from that.
Was so upset about that.
Yeah. That was terrible.
It was awful.
I mean, obviously if she's on meth, she's not going to be thinking clearly, but this is one of those things, you know. And but then people who formula feed their babies, I feel like this is another thing to sort of demonize the formula, and I want to be really careful about that because I of course believe breast milk is best, and did my best to nurse both babies. But there was a post that came out, I think it was this week. Did we share it on Mommy Beta on our
We did not. I shared it with the group. I'll go ahead and post that.
Okay. The one about how, you know, quit the attitude about formula. And I thought that was good because sometimes I think that maybe I can be a little, I want to say elitist, my attitude. Like, oh, you can't nurse your baby. That's too bad. You don't care enough about them, I guess. You know, like I don't ever want to have that attitude towards someone
else. Well, you know, I breastfed Reese she was 2 days old. My milk hadn't come in. I had a lot of complications because of my C-section. It was just one thing after another. So I, you know, it was really hard for me, but I ended up giving her some formula. And then when my milk went away at 4 months, I gave her some formula. And then when it came back, I was able to go back to breast milk. But, you know, I did what I had to do, and I feel really good that I did the best that I could with what I had.
Yeah, that's all that we can do. You know, my sister, mm-hmm. she tried and tried and tried to nurse her son, and she just couldn't do it. Her body didn't cooperate, and all right. she ever was able to pump out was, and he just didn't, because she couldn't do it right away, he never became a good latcher, and then she never could pump out more than like an ounce at a time, and he's a big boy. He was almost mm-hmm. 9 pounds when he was born, wow. so he needs food, yep. and she couldn't do it, and, you know, she looked at me one time, this actually makes me want to cry, but I'll tell the story, and she, I was nursing Ava, and Ava was like a week or two old, and she was giving Cruz a bottle, and she said, you know, I wonder if Cruz would latch since you have the milk, you know, I wonder what it would be like if you tried. And she wasn't really suggesting it, but she looked so defeated over it because she wanted Aww. To do it so bad. And my poor sister is an amazing mother,
yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's great to share breast milk, and the more we can do to help other mothers out, the better. But I also don't want to demonize people who use formula, even though
Absolutely
it's not,
not
my preference. But how dare you judge other people?
Yep, I also think that mothers should. I do think that mothers should have a choice. It's you know, we do the best we can with what we have, like I said, but I also think, you know, it's our bodies, and if a mother is not going to be happy and going to be miserable breastfeeding, it's probably not the best environment for the baby or the family overall.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I was reading this study about how babies of depressed mothers, like chronically depressed for, mm-hmm. you know, like not just postpartum depression, but people who've been depressed their whole lives,
right.
Their babies, they did scans of the brain and watched babies watch bubbles popping right in front of them, and kind of babies of mothers who were not depressed saw this as a fun activity and it amused them, but the babies of depressed mothers saw this as a negative thing. It scared them.
Oh no.
And so you realize like how much your demeanor really affects your child.
Right.
And so if you really are not happy with breastfeeding, you know, you're going to do other damage to your child beyond just yep. formula, you know. And like I think a woman in the my neighbor who couldn't breastfeed right away, the nurse in the hospital said, honey, formula babies go to Harvard too.
That's a really good just reminder,
right?
It's not everything. It's, you know, we can do what we can do, and that's it. And I think with that perspective, when I do have number two, I'm going to do the best that I can. But if I had as much trouble as I did breastfeeding with Reese, I'm not going to kill myself trying to get my milk back. I yeah. remember I was breastfeeding and then pumping every hour and a half to 2 hours to get my milk up for like 4 days straight. I wasn't sleeping because I wanted to be, and she was sleeping through the night early on because she wouldn't sleep through the day. So I was waking up every hour and a half to 2 hours at night trying to pump. This went on for 4 nights. I was taking every known herbal medication possible, you know, and it finally came back and it was worth it the first time around, but I don't think I'm going to kill myself right. the second time.
And I wouldn't trade, you know, the comfort and the intimacy of nursing your baby. You know, it's such a beautiful experience. And anyone who wasn't able to do that, I feel empathy for them.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
So speaking of empathy, that's something that I wrote about this week because I was finishing off this book called Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. And I really liked the book a lot. And I can talk about that another time. But there's an entire chapter in there about your marriage and just how detrimental marital conflict can be on your children and how, you know, you can't help it. If you are fighting with your spouse, you're fighting with your spouse. Maybe you can't help it, but I don't want to go into how. but what you can do is coach your children on how to deal with disappointment or fear or anger so that they can deal with their family life a little better. So even if you're eventually going to get divorced, you can help your children through these emotions. But they did talk about marital discord in general and talking about how emotion coaching is what he calls this, that you want to be an emotion coach. You feel empathy for someone and then help them see their way out of it or help them find solutions to what's bothering them. Instead
What's
of just
an example?
Like your kid says to you, I don't want to go to school tomorrow because, you know, my two girlfriends didn't talk to me today. And you'll say, instead of saying, well, tough luck, you're going to school because you want them to go to school, you'll say, oh, so you felt excluded today. And you help them to name their emotion. And then you help them to come up with solutions themselves instead of saying, you know, well, just play with so-and-so instead or bring your jump rope. You know, you help them come up with it themselves. And it helps, you know, we need to emotion coach ourselves every single day as adults. Mm-hmm. There's something that disappoints us or angers us or, you know, like yesterday something was bugging me. It was something so small, but it bugged me all day. And I had to tell myself, I'm not in a bad mood, but this thing is upsetting me and I have to address it and move on or else I'll just have a bad day for what? And so it talks about emotion coaching your spouse as well, because most of the time when your spouse comes home, they don't want you to solve all their problems. They want you to listen to them. And then they want to talk through the, you know, anything that happened at work that day. And I thought to myself, I usually don't give a crap what happens at work that day when Clayton goes out to work. And I thought, I don't think I'm being as empathetic as I can be. And I posted this and I had other moms say they felt the same way. And I was really glad that they said this because this was hard for me to admit that, you know, he goes off and he, you know, my husband is a TV anchor, so he's looking handsome and he's clean and he's got nice clothes on. And I'm at home and my hair looks terrible. I haven't showered. I probably haven't even brushed my teeth. You know, my clothes don't match. I might have put on a clean bra that day, but probably not. It's probably full of spit up. And I feel awful. And then he comes home and wants to tell me about his day. And I'm like, I don't care. My day was so much harder than yours, you know. And then I'm like, what? You know, this is a fantasy, him just like skipping off to work and high-fiving people and, you know, clicking his heels in the air. It's not like that. So I have to check myself and realize we're both trying hard. We both have two different roles.
That's so, so important. I loved your post and I completely, I felt like I could have written it. A few weeks ago, I wrote a blog post just thanking Josh because my husband, I don't take for granted, but I think, you know, he does walk in the door and I want him to take Reese off. I want him to be on daddy duty as soon as he walks in.
Right.
Like, I don't want him to be able to have time to go to the room and change into comfy clothes and take his shoes off and go to the bathroom. You know, the things that he should be able to do, right?
Right.
But I don't feel like I've had time to do anything all day. So he walks in and I'm like, here you go. And, you know, and he's so great. He just, you know, he takes to the room. He's like, Reese, do you want to help me take off my shoes? And he makes it a game and he's so good about it. And I just, you know, I wanted to thank him because it's really hard. He's had a hard day. He's, you know, he leaves the house at 6:30, then gets home at 6:30. So he's been gone 12 hours. And I have to, you know, I had to step back and realize like he's just as busy as I am in a different way. And I loved what you wrote at the end. Like you know, aren't being forced to do this. You're lucky and you have a choice and you choose to be home to do this. Right. And I totally agree. Like there are some really hard days, but I've chosen this life and I feel very lucky that I can be home to do this.
Right. It was me that went off to work when Miles was born. I went back 5 days a week and he works the weekends. And so 3 days a week, he was home with Miles and I would go off to work and, you know, put on my nice clothes and be clean and sit in my office and drink a Starbucks. And it was a lot easier than being home with the kids. I have to admit that to you. And then when I got home, I would want to go to the bathroom and take off my makeup and that kind of thing. And he'd be like, take this kid now. I feel like, you know, so, is that your computer? So anyway, you know, I've been on both sides of it and I know that it's a little bit more comfortable, or at least that's what I felt. It was more comfortable to be the one working, because you're in control of your day and I never am. But at the same time, yes, it's my choice. And, you know, you just need to have, he needs to have empathy for me. That's important. But I need to have empathy for him too. And it was really hard for me to admit that. And I was a little bit iffy about this post because I thought, okay, I'm admitting that I'm not always as kind to him as I could be. And I'm admitting that I get jealous. You know, sometimes I'm just jealous of the freedom. But surely I can't be the only one who feels like that.
No. And I have friends who tell me that they're still stunned that I've been home for 2 years. You know, I've done side projects and stuff, but mostly I'm a stay-at-home mom. And they just don't know how I do it because they say when they go to work, it's their time. And then they come home and they have a full solid 2 hours where they can be 110%, like the 110% mom, where I feel like I'm with Reese all day. So I have to spread that 110% and divide it by like 12 hours that I'm with her.
Right.
So yeah. At the end of the day, I'm spent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exhausting. It's exhausting for all of us. And so, you know, and I've really appreciated, I've been watching all the Democratic and Republican conventions lately. And when you have the first lady up there or Ann Romney, Mitt Romney's wife, talking about motherhood and how hard it is, I don't feel like they're doing it lip service. I kind of am like, for the first time in my life, being able to relate to this and thinking, yes, it's hard. Mothers do rule the world. But, you know, daddies have a very important role too. And actually, there's two chapters in this book, one about your marriage and another one just about fathers and how statistically there are so many statistics about how much of an effect the father can have in a child's life if it's a positive effect. So, you know, I have to appreciate that. But I was very, very thankful to everyone who reached out and said, thank you for saying this. And they felt the same way. And I think there's no shame in feeling this way unless you're just lashing out because you feel jealousy or resentment like this. And then right. You're being a total B word.
No, I think it's great that you acknowledged it. That's the first step in fixing something, because if you don't acknowledge it and you're not honest with yourself, then it's just a big fat lie. And right. You can continue being angry at the world because, you know, you have poop in your hair. No, maybe not poop. So hopefully not poop. Spit up in your hair and all over your
right.
all over your clothes. But I think it's great, and I commend you for acknowledging it. I think we all feel like that, and sometimes it's just hard to put in words.
Right. And at the end of the day, I know this is something that we all think about, but we are grateful for these children. You know, I don't want anyone else to do it. I want me to do it.
Right.
But, you know, there's just emotions that go along with it, especially if we've worked our whole lives. We're used to that, and we're used to being in control of our careers. So, right. Anyhow, so let's go ahead and move on. We don't have a show sponsor to tell you about this week. Hopefully we'll have one next week. But I want to talk more about your bringing up Bebe since we're on the literary track.
Yes, all of us moms have been doing tons of reading.
I know. How do we find the time?
I was just going to ask.
When do you read? You read? I was listening to the show 2 weeks ago and you said, I do all the reading and then dump it all on Josh before we go to bed. And well, that's exactly what I do.
I do the reading at night, and so he's in bed with me. And so whenever there's a point I want to share, I'm like, oh, listen to this, and then we'll talk about it, and then I'll continue reading.
Yeah.
So if it's worth something and I want to take it or I want to start practicing it in the household, then I'll explain to him, and, you know, we'll just talk about it, and he tells me what he thinks, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he doesn't do any of the parenting reading.
Yeah. And once I was talking to Clayton, I was like, you know, I feel like I was more interesting before I was able to talk about technology and gadgets and gear and that kind of thing. And he said, well, yeah, but you're just as interesting now. I mean, you're teaching me so much that I don't know about parenting. And so that's just as inspiring. And I thought that was really nice. And
that's kudos to Clayton.
Yeah, I know. It's the right thing to say. Sometimes he gets it right. I mean, he communicates for a living. So, you know. He ought to be able to say the right words most of the time. But anyway, yeah, I read sometimes when I'm nursing, I pull out a book because it can get a little monotonous.
When I used to nurse, I'd close my eyes and just kind of relax. I'm like, this is my quiet time because the baby's nursing and not crying.
Yeah, well, you had a louder baby. But
yes.
She eats a lot too, you know, and I try and just stare at her and kind of like rub her hands and stuff. But then there are times when I'm like, I'm getting antsy. I've been nursing for like 8 hours today. I need something to do.
I need to read. Yeah. Yeah. You are a bookworm, but I love it.
I am a book nerd. Yeah. So tell me more about this bringing up Bebe. I love the points about the weight. I've been trying to practice this.
Yes. It's so interesting. So the author, she basically says that French parents believe that teaching their kids to wait and cope with the word no, it's a cornerstone of raising their kids. And what I like about it is it's basically teaching them that the world does not revolve around them. And I've seen this so many times where, you know, the kid says something, needs something, and the parents just jump immediately, like, oh, what do you need? Mm-hmm. Whether they're in an adult conversation or they're on the telephone, you know, in the middle of an important conversation, or at the dinner table. And I've seen it so much, and it just does not sit well with me. I wasn't raised like that, and we had to wait. And so I'm trying to practice this with Reese. And so far it's working.
Yeah. I tried to explain the concept of waiting to Miles, who's two, the other day. I'm like, do you know what it means to wait? I was like, it means you wait. How do you explain that in words?
So I've been using the word patience with Reese. So Reese, let's give mommy some patience. And then, if I'm cutting up some vegetables and she wants a bite and I don't give it to her immediately, or I'm doing little things like if she wants a box of raisins and we're running out the door, I say, Reese, you have to wait until we get to the car. And she'll ask me about 100 times before we get to the car down the garage. But then as soon as we get there, I say, thank you for waiting so nicely. And that's a big wait. That's a 4-minute wait for her.
Right.
So I'm trying little things like that. And I think slowly she's getting it and it's working.
Yeah, which is so hard for them. I was reading in the last book that I was talking about, they said a toddler's mind has 3 requests per minute. 3 per minute. Isn't that crazy? You're like, I want my raisins. I want my milk. I want my carrots. I want this. I want that. Like, if we were like that, it would be insane. So for them to learn to wait is so hard.
Mm-hmm. And also just being told no, like, no, you can't do this. I've been at dinner parties where kids are there, and I've seen the kids rule the dinner party where, they have to sit in a certain place, even if the table's not set up for them to sit in the place that they want to sit at. And then they cry if they don't get their way. So the parents usually give in. I'm just like, oh my God. And I haven't been there, so I can't say I would never do it. But I feel like if you're having a dinner party, the kids don't need to say where everybody's going to sit, including the adults. So, maybe they can pick where they're going to sit and that's it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. So the waiting is, we're practicing. Let me know if you come up with any other ways.
I really couldn't figure out any other words to tell him. That I was like, that means we would just wait longer. Like, now I'm using the same word. That doesn't make any sense.
Patience or...
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll try that. I like that, thanking them for patience is a good one.
Yeah, or giving them something to wait, like a goal. So wait until mommy's done doing this, or wait until mommy's done doing
that's a good one.
Or until you do this, I don't know.
Right, yeah. Okay, and tell me about daycare. This is something that I was really fascinated by.
Oh my gosh, yes. I actually want to go back and read some of this. I only pulled just a couple highlights out. But the French Parents View daycare really positively, which, I know some Americans do, but also if you can afford it, people hire nannies. And the big difference, I think, is that daycare there is subsidized by the state. So mm-hmm. parents are charged on the sliding scale based on their income. Mm-hmm. The popular ones, it reminded me of San Francisco. When you have your child and you're a parent, before the baby's even born, you're urged to meet with the director of the daycares. And it's just so competitive. And the other huge difference is that a lot of the staff, they're trained. So they go to school to be trained to work in these daycares, also known as preschools. They're so competitive. I think the stat was 500 people apply and only 30 are admitted. So these 30 are kind of like the top staff daycare providers. And, they learn about child nutrition, sleep. They practice mixing baby formula and changing diapers. I don't know about here, but I don't think we have anything that compares to this, do we?
I don't think it's standardized. I know, there are pretty strict requirements to be a daycare provider. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that, the school down the street will have the same qualifications as, another one down the street.
Right.
Other than like CPR certification and things like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's federal.
Right. Okay. And the other big thing is, it sounded like in the book that you put your child in daycare, starting at 3-4 months, even if you're not going back to work. And then moms have all this, time for themselves. And I didn't write about that. That'll be a post for a different week. But basically moms, have time to work out and take care of themselves and not just think about the baby.
Yeah. And I struggle with that sometimes where I'm thinking, oh, I should be stimulating him and then stimulating her and then doing this and doing that. And I was like, is that historically my role, to teach them to be a completely well-rounded person, to teach them to eat well, to be clean, to poo in the potty, to pee in the potty, to learn the ABCs? Like, is it my role to teach them from top to bottom, or just facilitate them so that they can learn through all avenues of life? And sometimes I feel like, God, I have to, you know, I have to do everything. I have to be super mom. And it's interesting to learn that in other cultures, they don't put that on themselves.
No, I think they have a lot of help. I mean, I think in most other cultures, you have a lot of help. It's, you know, I forget which of the Natalie's, excuse me, wrote this, but it takes a village to raise a kid. Mm-hmm. It really does. And here we, you know, most of our families don't live right next door.
No. Yeah, I don't think any of us live close to our mm-mm. mothers.
No, and so, you know, the author, she doesn't have any family there, but she has a daycare who's, you know, right around the corner, and she can start dropping her kid off as early as 4 months. I don't think she did for the first one, but...
Right. Well, I think that's commendable. I wasn't, you know, I didn't love the whole attitude about breastfeeding, though, that you wrote about.
No. They just... And I don't know if it's just a cultural thing. The French women barely breastfeed. One pediatrician there says that the hospitals, they're not even encouraged to breastfeed. So that when they leave, mothers, you know, their breast milk hasn't been stimulated enough to come in. So they think that they just don't have enough milk, period. And so they just don't ever breastfeed.
Mm-hmm.
That's so sad. If they want to breastfeed... And there are some other theories that I thought were interesting, that French women don't breastfeed because they care more about their boobs than their babies,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I don't know if I believe that, or that it stretches out their breasts. Mm-hmm. And then the other is just education, that they don't know how important it is. I don't know if I believe any of that.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It hasn't made my boobs prettier, but... You know, what strikes me so much is that the French are such purists about their food. And so why would they, you know, choose to feed their child something synthetic when they don't really choose that by and large for themselves?
Right. Well, she does bring up a point about that, how they'll use, you know, everything organic and you know, nothing processed. It's amazing, but they choose not to breastfeed. But they, if you think about it, they're also very, I mean, it's a cultural thing. They're always so well put together.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see, you know, the book talks about it, French women in their Lulu pants and sweatshirts, you know, running, you know, walking down the street in a stroller.
No.
Their makeup's done, their hair's done, they're dressed nicely.
Yeah. Hate them.
right. It's just a different way of living. So while they, you know, they'll make all their homemade food, they may place more value on their bodies and their, not maybe not their self, but their appearance than breastfeeding.
Right. And there are studies that point to the fact that if the mother is healthier, and I'm talking about all the way around, mentally, physically, emotionally, then the entire family is healthier.
Mm-hmm.
We are the nucleus.
Yep.
Like it or not. No. Well, that's really interesting. Is this the last one, or do you have more thoughts about this book?
No, I think I'll be writing one more post.
Okay. All right. I'm really excited to read it. And I just picked up Positive Discipline. So
I
started
that
one too.
I'm reading it now.
Yeah. I'm only in the introduction, but I'm excited to discuss that one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
So one other thing that I thought worth talking about, and I don't think there's really that much to say, but worth mentioning, that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention came out this week and said that there's a growing number of children being sent to the emergency room every year because they're swallowing batteries. And, you know, battery is something that's so easy to leave around, especially because all children's gear runs on stupid batteries. I wish you could recharge like a baby swing or bouncy chair, but you can't. You have to buy those GD batteries. I hate them so much. So just make sure that you really keep those out of reach of your children, because like Clayton was changing the battery for something the other day and he left it and he had to go do something and he was like, oh, I'll get that later. And I was like, well, you know, there's a new study about this. He goes, I'll get that right now. And he just picked it up and put it away. And, you know, some of the symptoms are abdominal pain, fever, breathing problems. So don't take these things lightly and keep the batteries out of reach. Anything to say about that?
No. No, I think just watch out for batteries.
Watch out for batteries, indeed. Okay. Well, do you have a little victory? We didn't confer about this.
No, I don't. Do you? Maybe one about Ava.
Yeah, I have one about Ava, actually. She started to really laugh at her brother, and it makes me die inside because she can sit up and interact with him and reach for him now. So he started to notice that he can make her laugh, and that makes his day. And so she looks at him, and he just likes to jump off a step or something, and she giggles and giggles and giggles, and it just melts my heart to see them interacting like that.
That's,
it's like my
so
whole world's
sweet.
Complete. Yeah, it really
I
want to
see a video.
I have one. I'll send one. Good. I won't bother the rest of the audience with it. Anyhow, well, thank you so much for listening to the Mommy Beta podcast. We will be back next week. And Natalie's coming back, the other Natalie. So I can't wait to hear about her birth of her second son.
Yes.
A lot to say. Thanks for joining. Remember, you can always find these blogs at mommybeta.com, facebook.com/mommybeta, or on Twitter at mommybeta, or our email address, mb@mommybeta.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye.